after 1 o'clock on a Friday afternoon with a beautiful sun shining. And we will have the roll call, Madam Secretary.
Representative Gatto?
Here.
Representative Hines?
Here.
Representative Lynn?
Here.
Representative Morgan? Representative Wolf?
I am.
Who
am?
Present.
Chair Faith.
Here. And we do have a quorum, and I would like to welcome Representative Cisna to the House Resource Committee. The one that she's certainly familiar with, but it's a new face this year. So, welcome, and it's happy to have you aboard here. And with that, we shall go right into the bills that we're going to hear today. We're going to try to do about four or five, if we can. I want to go through Senate Bill 47, Senate Bill 88, Senate Bill 55, and hopefully House Bill 246.
247.
147.
147.
That's, I'm just taking the way they appear on my list. No special order, just in the order they written down here. Thank you. Okay. And it's Senate Bill 147, an act relating to the control of nuisance wild animals and providing for an effective date. We have one person online who would like to testify. Robert Doran, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Would you give your name and your affiliation and your testimony, please?
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Robert Doran. We started a business approximately 1 year ago dealing with problem wildlife or in the animal damage control. And we would like to see this bill passed so that we can greatly serve the public in South Central Alaska. We're seeing a tremendous amount of growth in this area. We're also seeing more and more residential and commercial developments constructed very near to prime wildlife habitat. And as anyone who's traveled through Anchorage, I'm sure they can see that even despite these changes, many of the species of birds and animals continue using these developed areas for protection and foraging. These factors, along with little or no hunting or trapping pressure, create the potential for confrontations to arise between people and wildlife. And even if the location allowed for regular hunting or trapping, many of these problems occur when the regular season for several species of animals is closed. And a provision in Alaska state law that would allow a licensed individual specializing in the control of problem wildlife to control nuisance animals outside of the regular season would alleviate this problem. If properly regulated, many people in the public service industry and different agencies would benefit. Based upon conversations that I have had with state, borough, and municipal agencies, including the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Anchorage and Matsu Animal Control Shelters, as well as the Alaska State Troopers Division of Wildlife Protection, I found that these agencies often either don't have the time or the personnel or resources to adequately deal with these conflicts. And with them being able to refer problem wildlife calls to a licensed nuisance wildlife control operator, this would relieve these and other agencies from this responsibility. Local agencies could also benefit by gathering data from NWCOs to evaluate urban impact on local wildlife populations and their surrounding habitat. And the evidence of these kinds of benefits can be seen in the lower 48, where animal damage control companies are working in cooperation with their local game departments and offering a very valuable service to the public. I am prepared to answer any questions that anybody might have. This is a relatively new business nationwide, and it's certainly very new up here to Alaska. I would just like to emphasize that it is a people-oriented or a people service dedicated to serving the general public, and I'd appreciate any questions or be happy to answer them as best I can.
Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Cisna.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. As a new person, I'm not familiar with the business that the testifier has. Can you tell me, sir, what exactly you do?
Yes, ma'am. This is a business that's very similar to pest control, only rather than dealing with insects, we're dealing with species of wildlife, various species. It can range anywhere from pigeons nesting on top of a rooftop, a commercial building, where the droppings and whatnot can become a hazard to entering the building via the heating and or air conditioning systems. It could be a squirrel living in somebody's attic, a resident, a beaver causing problems, damming up waterways that result in a flooded highway right-of-way. There's a variety of different things. It's difficult to anticipate every type of situation that can arise, and just the ones that we've been called upon have been very unique. And so it's basically a wildlife control business, much related to pest control, only not dealing with the insects.
Representative, hi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I have a couple of things. One is, other than, I'm guessing aircraft, how do you get beleaguered by snow geese?
Snow geese, what was recommended to me when I first began pursuing this, I spoke with Phil Cole in Juneau, who was at that time in charge of special permits for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And he suggested that I list every species that we would want to deal with or be able to deal with. And as I said before, it's very difficult to anticipate what types of calls we would receive, and therefore we wanted to include just about every species that is indigenous or migrates to the state of Alaska.
Okay, so that's... Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that's just, you're just allowing that in there in case it comes up, sort of?
That's absolutely correct. Just to give you an example of that, I've received one phone call that I received involved an alligator in the state of Alaska, which I absolutely never thought I would receive, but I did, in fact, receive a call.
You're calling, I get one. I might, you're kind of new up here, I might make a parenthetic comment that we have one of the highest alcohol rates in the state of Alaska, in case you...
That is true. I did. This was a phone call that I received. We were referred to by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. So the department called me regarding this, and it was kind of a joint effort with Matt Sioux Animal Control. But yes, I very much am aware of that.
That was a joint effort.
Okay.
Yeah, it was joint.
Any other question of Mr. Doran? Because I didn't see Senator Green when I came in, and I did miss his staff, and I'm sure that staff is certainly want to testify to this, and so I'm going to give them that opportunity now, and I apologize for not having you first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jacqueline Chacon, and I'm staff for Senator Lyda Green, and I appreciate the opportunity to introduce the bill. What this does is it provides authority for the Alaska Board of Game to be able to deal with nuisance wild animals. We've specifically targeted in this bill small mammals and small geese, not geese, the birds, right? Wild birds. So it does this in two ways. What it does specifically, if you'll read your bill in front of you, but there's two things it does. One is it creates a professional license so that persons such as Mr. Doran, they've heard online, they can offer this service to people. The second thing it does is it gives authority to the department that they can grant authority to persons to deal with these animals at their own home. And so what this does is it makes it so that these animals are protected from persons such as myself that lack the knowledge of their behavior patterns and their behaviors, so that rather than having private individuals trying to deal with them, I can call up the Department of Fish and Game and they can refer me to a list of persons that offer this service. So then I can call up that person such as Mr. Doran and have him come to my home and remove this animal for me. So it does it in two ways. And so as you'll see in front of you on the sponsor statement, there's a list of animals given there. However, that is in no way a definitive list. That's why one of the provisions in this bill is the regs don't go into effect until July 04. It gives ample time to the department to go through their process in determining what animals. So I don't think it would be a helpful exercise for me to go through what specific animals are or aren't on the list because the list hasn't been created because the regs haven't been written, and that's something that the department will do through their process. And they're here today and have ample amount of experience and knowledge more than myself, so I would defer those kind of questions to them, but that's why we've given the effective date on the regs to July 04, so they can put that through their process.
Okay, thank you. Question, Representative Godel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What has been the procedure to date for doing exactly what this bill will be able to do in the future?
Again, I think the department might be better suited to answer that to the chair, but just I know that they have different rules and regulations to do different, not the small nuisance wild animals. You know, for big game, they have different procedures and processes in place. But this is sort of a loophole, as far as I understand, where they don't have the specific authority where if these animals aren't in season to do something about them. So if I'm a, you know, private citizen and I call up and say, I have a porcupine in my yard and, you know, I have toddlers and I'm worried about the situation, they, you know, they don't have a list of someone that they can refer me to at that point. So, you know, maybe my husband's out there with a bag and a shovel, but, you know, I don't think that's a very effective solution. So my understanding right now is they don't have the authority if it's not in season for these small nuisance animals.
Any other questions? Yes, Representative Hines.
I grew up with calling the cooperative extension, you know, and how do you make jam, and is this, you know, is this jar puffy, whatever. So what I'm wondering is, like, we have a cabin up in Talkeetna, and up there, there's a proliferation of bats in people's homes. So I'm kind of looking around you there. So would this be something where I could call the Board of Game and say, you know, how can I deal with this problem, or do you have answers like a co-op extension would?
Again, I would refer that to the department. I don't know if the chairman would like to have them come up, but I'd probably be more comfortable with them answering questions of that nature as far as how they're going to write their specific regulations to enforce the statute.
Any other questions? We have a Karen Deathridge.
Who's going to
answer?
That's all right. Who's going to answer the question?
Yeah, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Matt Robus. I'm the director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation, and I'm a little worried about the billing that's been given me about knowing so much about everything, but I'll do my best. To Representative Gatto's question about how these situations have been handled before, this gets into the testimony I was going to give or will give, but basically the story is that when our permitting authorities were defined through various pieces of legislation, we've gotten many authorities, but what's been left out is nuisance, and it was specifically left out the last time these things were looked at, so that if something escalates to the point of being a public safety problem, we have the authority to issue a permit for people to take wildlife under those circumstances. If it's for a scientific or educational purpose, we have the authority to take care of it. If it's a danger to human life or property, people, including the department, but including citizens, have the power to take game if they stay within certain parts, certain regulations. But we have run into situations where, when asked, we've been unable to issue a permit to allow somebody to deal with a nuisance situation. And that has gotten to the point where the federal agency, Fish and Wildlife Service, has issued a permit to. The one instance I can think of is that in the springtime there was a raven nest on a crane boom, and it was time to get that crane into operation. And the Fish and Wildlife Service could issue a permit for the removal of that nest. And we couldn't unless we swallowed really hard and decided that was some sort of a public safety problem. With this legislation, we will be able to authorize commercial operators who get a license or individuals who have a nuisance problem to try to deal with that problem through one of our permits, and it would be legal for us to do so. So it really does add a capability that we haven't had so far. I'll add that for beaver, we already have capability of allowing people to remove beaver under a depredation permit. That's a special regulation already in place. And actually porcupines, I believe there's no limit, no season, no restrictions on taking those, so that if you need to, you can already deal with a porcupine, although we're often called for our expertise with animals to advise how to do it. And a shovel in a bag isn't as good as a garbage bucket and a piece of plywood.
Or a shotgun.
That's another alternative.
Representative Gatto.
Hardest question I can imagine. You want to build a church, you buy 20 acres of land, there's a tree, and in the tree is an eagle's nest. Is that a nuisance?
Environment impact.
through the chair, Representative Gatto, that is a problem that people developing land deal with, but that is, there's both a federal act and state regulations that deal with that, and that would not fall under the nuisance regulations that we're talking about. Just to add to that, any migratory bird is under the umbrella jurisdiction of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, and therefore we can only permit to the extent that the feds have already decided to permit on any migratory bird. So, for instance, if we wanted to move a raven's nest or issue a nuisance permit to deal with some geese that were depredating somebody's grain field, and that was considered a nuisance rather than a public safety problem, we could go ahead and do it, but we could only do it within the sideboard set by a federal permit that has already been issued. And we do lots of scientific educational permits under that very scenario.
Could he finish answering my question first?
Well, I'm sorry. I thought you were through here.
No, he came up to answer about the cooperative extension, if with the bats.
Fine, thank you for reminding me. I confess that in thinking out this bill and in analyzing it, we hadn't thought of that specific circumstance, but I don't see, if the cooperative extension had people who wanted to be authorized to do that type of thing, we would now have the authority to at least consider permitting doing that.
Could we, as just citizens, call you and say, okay, where you act like a cooperative extension also, and I say, I've got these bats in my attic, you know, how can I deal with them? Can you do that with me on the phone, or do...
Through the chair, one of the big jobs that our area management people throughout the state in our 23 offices do is field calls like that every year. And, I've been in that position. I'm always caught between wanting to be of service and wanting to get the rest of your work done, and so we often give a whole lot of advice over the phone. We try not to advise people to do things that we don't have the authority to do or they don't have the authority to do. But, yes, we issue a lot of extension-type advice as the wildlife experts for the state, and I'm sure we'll always continue to do so, but now we can actually tell somebody, you may go ahead under this permit and take an animal, and take means a wide variety of things, anything from killing the animal to moving it to hazing it, scaring it away. You can't do any of that legally unless we authorize it, but now we'll be able to do that for nuisance animals. I guess I'm kind of doing my testimony here on the fly. I'll point out that in issuing these permits to private individuals and to commercial operators, we would generally take the approach that non-lethal methods are preferable to lethal methods. We would try to, you know, escalate from non-lethal, and if that doesn't work, eventually get into lethal take if necessary. This is not a defense of life and property thing where you're defending yourself against a dangerous animal, and so therefore we'd rather help people find non-lethal ways to approach it. But lethal is also possible under the authorities that this would give us. And one, if I may add, the authority, the effective date would go into effect a year from this July 1 for the commercial part of this. For the non-commercial, it would take effect July 1st of this year so that we'd immediately be able to start issuing permits to individuals who have nuisance animal problems.
Representative Lynn, you wanted to...
Procedurally, somebody wants to get the bats out of my belfry, we don't know who to call. But at the university, was it the University of Alaska or Alaska Pacific University? Seemed like a couple years ago, I recall reading about it, was some kind of a hawk or something. There was, making strafing runs on...
It attacked me, as a matter of fact.
Attacked you?
That very same one, yep. Yep, yep. I was there.
Permit you to move either one of the attacker or attackee in that case.
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, we would have the authority to do that if that was judged to be a nuisance. It might already be judged a public safety problem, I suppose, since there were attacks happening.
You were the one?
No, I wasn't the one, but I was.
Let's allow the person to answer the question rather than talking back and forth, please.
I beg your pardon.
But we'll continue.
Mr. Chair, that particular incident being with a northern goshawk, I believe, those birds are uncommon enough that I think we'd look long and hard before we disturbed the nesting situation for that bird. But the authority would now be there if we needed it.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
The question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I do apologize, Mr. Chair, but it just was, it just brought up a very vivid memory. And so let's take the case of Representative Gatto's 20 acres with the eagle's nest in the prime building spot. What kind of latitude would you have with this? And, like, what things, eagles being eagles, and that's federal law, right? What kind of latitude would you have in terms of taking care of that problem?
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, to tell you the truth, that being outside the scope of this bill, I'm not fully prepared to. I have not read up on the Bald Eagle Act lately. I do know that Fish and Game advises land management agencies and other permitting agencies about what can and cannot be done. So that particular situation probably, I'm not sure it falls under the scope of this act. Yes, thanks.
Doesn't?
I would have to concur about certainly knowing as much about it probably as he does.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jacqueline DeCoe again, through the chair. You'll notice it says small, and I don't think that, I think that's what he's getting at. The word small would preclude eagles being from in this legislation.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hate to do this. Would an empty nest be different than a nested nest as far as nuisance?
We're beginning to netpick this problem a little bit here, so go ahead and answer the problem, but we're going to get on with this piece of legislation.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, assuming that's to me, if it's an inactive nest, I think we determine that it's just a bunch of sticks, but if there has been activity in the nest and there's eggs in the nest or birds around the nest, then we'd probably treat that as a nuisance.
See how hard it can get to a simple bill of small animal control.
Okay, I'm delighted to see, even though it's a simple bill, I think it's certainly a portion of our statutes that fills a void, and I'm glad to see this. We have online Karen Dethridge. Are you still with us, Karen? And you will probably be the last person to testify.
Did I get it? Hi, this is Karen.
Would you give your name and your affiliation, please?
Karen Dethridge, Defenders of Wildlife.
How are you?
I'm sorry?
How are you today?
Wet. We're wet up here. But we're happy about it. We need the rain. Thank you.
Would you proceed with your testimony?
Sure. I'm, like I said, representing Defenders of Wildlife, and I'm actually just testifying that I was not aware of this bill, and I had a couple heart palpitations from the first testifier, so I thought I'd at least throw in a couple of things. First of all, I served for 3 years on the Urban Wildlife Task Force in Anchorage, which we have clearly defined a lot of quote-unquote nuisance animals, most of them being exotic species up here, and also some issues like nuisance birds, magpies, and small mammals. The department up here has got another person working with the area biologist to assist in some of these calls. My concern, I guess, the second thing I want to add is that wildlife is very, very important to people living in Anchorage, extremely important, and I think that we need to be concerned about any kind of permitting system that might endanger what people consider to be very valuable, whether it is a porcupine, which I did have in my yard, and I used a trash can and a broom, and he now lives in Kincaid Park. Anyway, my first concern would be that I'm unclear as whether the Board of Game is really going to have jurisdiction over the department in allowing these permits, and because I think any kind of decision obviously should come from the department. My second concern is whether this would create a greater job a heavier job or burden for the department to enforce, to make sure that there's no abuse of any kind of permit system a greater job than what we already have out there. Is this a major issue out there? Is this really causing stress on the department out there? Because I'm not aware of it. I'm aware of bear calls and moose calls because I work closely with ADF&G up here in Anchorage. And one of the things we've done very successfully and cooperatively is educate the public. And that has created huge, huge differences in the number of calls and even the number of bears, for example, that have been killed as a result of being a nuisance, quite frankly. So I'm just wondering about some of those. I have some of those questions and concerns. This may be a positive bill, but I do have those concerns. Thank you.
Well, thank you for testifying. Okay, is there any other members of the Department of Fish and Game that would like to testify? Any other members in the audience? I don't think we have anybody else online, so I'm going to, yes, you want to ask a question. Representative
Chairman,
Massey.
If you're ready for a motion.
Let me just close public testimony first. Public testimony is closed, and then I would entertain the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move Senate Bill number 147 out of committee with the attached fiscal note with individual recommendations and ask unanimous consent.
Is there any objection?
Checked.
Yep. Would you poll the body, Madam Secretary?
Yes.
Agenda to be heard today is 155. I'm looking for it here. Senate Bill 155. We're waiting for Senate proceedings to start. And let's take a quick, a short at ease. Well, our next bill that we will be looking at is Senate Bill 155, and we have us Senator Ralph Seekins, who is the sponsor of this bill. Senator Seekins, would you please give testimony?
Thank you, Mr.
Yes.
Before we start, I guess we have a CS in front of us, a research version, and if you could explain the changes in the CS that the Senate did.
Okay, and you're looking at / uniform, is that correct?
Version W.
Let me find it in my package.
23-LS0855/W.
That's the version that came off the floor, Senator. That came off the floor. We have bills other places, and my staff is keeping me up to speed here. Thank you. If you take a look at this version, what we did, Chair Mastic, was we basically made sure that this bill, from the original, we included Wolverine at the request of the department because we felt that it was important that Wolverine, who can be cumbersome and probably be at threat in the wild from any kind of airborne hunting, should be protected, and so we reinserted that protection from the original. We also changed this around so that we said that the process that should be followed in making this decision would be that the Board of Game got the input from the division, from the scientists in the division, made the decision that, first of all, to make this intensive management area under current statute, and then once they had determined it was a intensive management area, then they could authorize a predator control program that included same-day airborne and airborne shooting. And then we said that they then had the prerogative to be able to determine who the participants could be. They should establish the predator reduction objectives, limits, methods, and means to be employed, who is authorized to participate, and the conditions for participation of individuals in the program. What we did was we basically eliminated the second bite at the apple from the commissioner, by the commissioner, and said that this is a board of game process with scientific input, the best scientific input coming from the department. And once the department provided that information, it was not necessary for the commissioner to recertify the information that his staff had already brought to the board in order to make that decision. And so this decision now is as apolitical as it can be, is done by the members of the board of game, and is based on sound science to come to that conclusion. And so we revised the bill to include that process.
Good. Representative Lynn? Didn't you raise your hand? I'm sorry. Wolf.
My alias is Lynn.
I thought you were already roadkill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. That's a vote of confidence, I guess. What you're doing with this bill is you're applying sound scientific information to as close to a public board as possible and allowing the board members of the Board of Game to make those decisions and set up a means, methods and means, and best practices, procedures. This is what this bill does. Am I correct?
Exactly. What we're trying to do here is we do have a statutorily appointed Board of Game. These are the people. We, as trustees and members of these bodies, the trustees of the resources of the state of Alaska, including Wild Game, we have set up a statutory process in the Board of Game so that they can look at and have a public process to take a look at all of the reasons for having methods and means of harvest, et cetera, for Wild Game in the state of Alaska to comply with our constitutional requirement to manage for sustained yield. What we've said was those decisions should be made based on the best available science, should not be made based on politics. We should be managing this resource scientifically. So what we have in our process today is testimony that comes to the Board of Game, including testimony from our own experts, our scientists that tell us population objectives, carrying capacities, bull-cow ratios, all these things that can come into play to determine are we meeting the constitutional mandate for sustained yield or not. If there's a problem, then help us to identify the problem and show us, and it has to be here, that the board shall have had to have determined based on information provided by the department in regard to an identified big game population that they haven't met the objectives. That could be a harvest objective. That could be a population objective. It could be both on predators or on prey. And that a cause for the failure is predation. It has to be an identified cause scientifically. And then it's a reasonable expectation that a predator control program could aid in the achievement of those objectives that could get us there. Then they have to design how the best possible way to carry out that predator reduction would be. There's some control all the way through, and we've tried very hard to make sure then that the Board of Game understands they just can't say, well, we need to reduce predators here. They have to show why, and they have to show what the result will be, and then they have to establish how many. They have to establish the methods and means to be able to do it, because in different parts of the state, different types of methods and means can be effective or not effective. And then they have to determine who can participate, And then on top of that, the conditions for participation. So we've said, along with you making this decision, you have some responsibility to the people of the state of Alaska to make sure you're doing it properly. And so we're kind of expanding not only the opportunity, but also the responsibility. This does not preclude the department from being able to handle their own parallel if they so wish. This just allows them to say, here's a problem, here's a solution, here's a way it can be done, and to authorize private individuals to be to assist, as the governor has said. He'd like local folks to be able to carry out the predator control programs as much as possible. And I think that this accomplishes that, and it accomplishes it, keeps it out of the political arena. Yes, they are somewhat political appointees, but they're confirmed by these bodies, and so they would now have that decision-making authority. And you're correctly right on target.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Senator. Please note that the representative Guttenberg is right. Are there any other questions? Yes, Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a question about bears. Does this bill have any effect on bear population?
If a bear is a predator, they have the responsibility and the right to determine how to control it. I believe a bear is a predator. In fact, I think bears have a greater effect in many areas on mortality rates for moose calves than wolves do.
A question for Representative Hines.
I do. You know, I've struggled with this.
I hope I've convinced you.
A couple of questions. On page 2, you've got the board game authorizes, and then it goes on to say methods and means to be employed. And who is authorized to participate in the program? So are you saying that the Board of Game will decide who can shoot, who can fly, who can, what methods, or does this go back to Fish and Wildlife?
Board of Game.
The Board of Game will have authority over all this. Okay, follow-up.
That is consistent. That is consistent with their authority in statute now already provides that. This is merely a reiteration, a restatement of other rights and responsibilities that they have in statute.
Okay. Earlier we talked about, could you just say this again for me, the numbers in, I think it was Northern Alaska we were talking about, with the wolf population versus the moose population? Do you have any sort of...
I can give you some examples. I'll give you one example from Unit 13, for an example, which is Game Management Unit 13, is basically this area out here, right about in here. We have the Parks Highway, the Denali Highway, the Richardson Highway, and the Glen Highway. So that's basically contained within that boundary. Right between the two major population areas of the state of Alaska. At one time, in the late 80s, early 90s, the moose population, the reproductive base of that population, was about 27,000. Today, it's less than 8,000. A number of years ago, the Board of Game said, this is now an intensive management area, an authorized predator control program. But under the last administration, for political reasons, stated that way, not assumed, they decided not to do any kind of predator control program in there. The human harvest, the harvest by humans, let's put it that way.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm not going there.
We don't want to authorize that. Thank you. The harvest by humans has stayed below 1,000. Something's killing those animals, and the biologists say it's wolves and bears.
Wolverine?
Wolves and bears. And they say we need to have a predator control program. The wolf population is 900 plus, roughly, depending on when you measure it. The ceiling that's been established by the board is around 200. The bear population exceeds 1,500, 1,600 grizzly bears in that area. The population is way lower than that. I think somewhere, I don't have the chart here with me, somewhere
around the highest would be, well, I do have the chart. Let me, if you'll excuse me for just one moment. These are the wolf population trends for Unit 13. I'll be glad to pass these around, make copies available for everyone. This is the population trend. This is the objective that was set by the department, under 200. But nothing's been done to reduce that objective other than private hunting. So I can pass that around. My staff has done a great job.
Great.
Thank you. If you take a look at this, this is the moose population trends for Game Management Unit 13. You can see here it was in the 27,000 range. Now it's less than 8,000. And here's the harvest by humans. Here's the objective. We're failing in managing the resources that are the property of the people of the state of Alaska, the public trust assets of the people of the state of Alaska. Here are the moose calves. You often hear, well, predators only take the weak, maimed, and the sick. Well, that includes babies. 80% of the moose calves that are born in this area or more are dead before they're 4 weeks old. If you look at the bear populations, they can't even count them, so they're estimating them around 1,500 plus. You can't even count them, there's so many of them. This is the objective, and this is the harvest. You can't catch them without a predator control program of some kind. The Board of Game has to authorize that because the mandate is primarily the highest and best used by statute is for human consumption. I submit to you that could be, if we were just to take one-third of what we could have produced out of there, we would triple the harvest of moose in the state of Alaska in the high years. Triple it. And if those people from Anchorage and Fairbanks and the highly populated part of the state were able to have a reasonable opportunity to harvest close to home, they wouldn't be going to Ruby or to Rampart or other parts of the state to hunt. Not only do we solve the problem by controlling our populations of game close to the problem of managing for sustained yield, we take the pressure off the rural communities, which I think is a secondary benefit of equal importance. So give people a chance to harvest close to home. We'll solve some of the other issues of the state as well. So, yes, Representative Hines, there is a problem out there. It is a real problem. No one will dispute these numbers from the department. These are taken from their own reports. A couple of them, the trend has been extended 1 year, but it's on a straight line trend, and there's no reason to believe that that won't continue. And so there's a real problem, and we better get with fixing it. Now, so what I've tried to do is to come back and those people who've been working with me and say, let's do it scientifically, not politically. Let's get it over with. It's not something that's fair chase. It has to be a predator control program. It has to show that there's a real need. It has to show that there can be an effect from it. And then we do it.
Questions? Let's take a question from Representative Gatto.
I know you're dying to comment on the bump in the moose population that occurred around 1995.
I think some of these declines, as you can see, well, that's the caribou.
Yeah, we're looking at this graph here.
I think you'll see a general trend there, and there is a slight anomaly. And I have not asked Department of Fish and Game, but the experts that helped us put this together, the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Association, our members, some of those people that are on that board are retired game biologists, and they tell us that that anomaly can be from other things too, including weather patterns.
Diseases and predator populations.
You'd see more of a straight line here, but you had a couple of rough winters in there is what they told me that caused some additional population bumps. But this, if you take a look at a straight line here, this primarily is a result of predator pressure, according to the members of the Board of Game when they made this a
an intensive management area.
Any other questions? Representative Hines.
Could you tell me, Senator Seekins, the gestation period for a moose, and can you tell me on wolf and approximately how many they have in each litter and how many litters they have a year? You see where I'm going with
a moose? There's a high twinning rate in moose. I can't tell you the exact number, but there's a high twinning rate. Wolves can have 3 to 6 or more pups as much as twice a year. So a moose right now, in Unit 13, from myself, from other people who do hunt and travel in Unit 13, it's very rare to see a moose calf that makes it into the fall. And wolves, as I said, have the opportunity, or they're just like dogs. They can come into heat twice a year. They can have 2 litters a year. So you can have anywhere from 3 to 6 or more pups, and as much as twice a year. So they have the ability, once you get into a predator pit, they call it, to overproduce to the point that it just continues to drive down the population. Now, some areas of the state, Northwest, dynamic, there's always in a dynamic. There's never any so-called balance of nature. These populations are either declining or increasing, but they're always in a dynamic.
Thank you.
Representative Wolf.
One of the things I just want to make very clear, I support this bill wholeheartedly. I think it's time that we go in this direction. One comment I want to make is Alaska's Constitution clearly states and explains maximums, sustained yield principles for maximum benefit for residents of Alaska. To define, you know, Senator made a very clear point, and I want to agree with him wholeheartedly about the fact that this bill does one thing, gives them the direction. Let's get into it. It's not a hunting opportunity. It is a predator control program. And I think that the board, putting it on the Board of Game, having them do it, set it up, methods and means and best practice procedure is the direction. This is not wild-eyed hunters and super cubs, now, as one of the statements been made. Okay. I support this very strongly.
Thank you, Representative Wolf, and that's true. What we've tried to do by telling the Board of Game that they have the right to determine who participates, we would believe that they would have the responsibility to make sure that the people who did it were responsible people, not just opening it up to anybody. In fact, I had a meeting yesterday, if I could, Mr. Chair, had a meeting yesterday with two of the members from the department, along with one of the other senators, and with a gentleman from the U.S. Department of Agriculture who was here talking to us. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has a division, or branch, or division, or at least an office, that assists other states with predator control. The man himself is a certified aerial gunner and told us of all the various states, the western states, that utilize airborne hunting, airborne predator control programs, airborne shooting, to control their predators. There's one state that very obviously is not there, this one. And there, he makes his business is to assist in predator control all across the nation while we do nothing. And I think that's a very interesting, I had a very interesting conversation with him. He said the same thing that I did. The objective should be when we find a problem to take care of it efficiently, effectively, and humanely. And that's what I think we can do with this bill.
We got Representative Guttenberg.
And, Senator, I'm sorry I was late. I had a bill up in another committee right next door, fortunately. Why doesn't the governor do this now? Doesn't he have the authority? I mean, we heard 8 years of lambasting of the previous governor not doing predator control. Now we hear that he could never have done it, and we need enabling legislation for Governor Murkowski to do it. Wasn't that the case?
One of the reasons that, and I neglected to probably make this clear to everyone, and I'll iterate it here. The current statute basically says that the predator control program, airborne shooting, can only be based on the prey population objective. And and then has to be certified by the commissioner. This now allows the board game to use all population objectives and all objectives, including harvest objectives. You may have a population objective that's fairly stable, but you're not able to harvest anything for human use because it's being over-harvested by predators. But under the current law, you could not do anything about that. The McGrath area, if you'll recall, was dumbed down. It had a population of objective of, let's say, a unit of three, and they reduced it to a unit of one so that they could meet the population objective. So now you couldn't do anything until you could show that the prey population didn't meet the objective. So we want to roll back into that the ability to look at harvest harvest objectives as well as predator population objectives. This now allows them to look at all their objectives and come up with a harmonious program. And now the governor himself, I don't know why the governor does not choose to do what he does not do. I have not heard anyone from the Department of Administration say that it was based on any kind of scientific principle. And so to take that kind of political pressure off of any governor, no matter who it is that's in office or what party they're from in office, I think this should become an apolitical and science-based decision. By doing that, we don't put anyone in a position where they have to worry about the headline in the paper related to their activity. It's as this governor asked it to be early, to be science-based, and as he's asked it to be primarily carried out by people that live in the communities where it's necessary. Nowhere else in statute, on any fish or game regulation, does a commissioner or a member of the administration have any kind of veto power on a program authorized by the board. And we're now making this part of the statute consistent with every other statute.
Okay, Representative Gatto, we still have a lot of people here to testify, so we want to really begin to start limiting our questions and start beginning to listen to some testimony.
Okay, I think part of the answer was was tourism that tended to drive some decisions. However, I wanted to point you to this graph on predator populations. We're all familiar with the hare and the rabbit and the hare and the lynx. And we learned in school as the predators go up, the prey goes down, and then they go vice versa. But here we have a steady increase in the predator population in spite of a declining prey population. Would that reflect that the wolves can get along on other prey and wait?
They'll eat them out until they're gone.
And
then they'll worry about that. There's still enough of them over there to kill, but they're killing the moose. They're also killing the caribou. And they'll eat them down until they're gone, and then they'll start eating each other. 30% of the wolves that are killed in Alaska today are killed by other wolves for dinner.
Important point. Thank you.
Okay, one more question of Senator, and then we're going to go to...
Mr. Chairman, did my staff provide an editorial from the Daily News Miner today for you? I don't know if that was...
Senator, I don't think today.
If I could, I could give you an opinion editorial that appeared in today's Fairbanks Daily News Miner.
I saw something in here on that. There is a stack on that.
This is a new one
today.
Oh, yeah. You're there.
Just to give you a sense of the people from the interior of Alaska and how they support science-based control.
Here's another color. He's came out in black and white.
I'll get him a color one.
I think I may have just gotten it wrong.
To Representative Gatto's point, if my education back in high school serves me correctly, the wolf predator is the only predator that actually eat mud to survive, because mud doesn't have all the nutrients. Add that little point.
Okay, I think we will have Matt Robus from Fish and Game.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and I'm going to go back and chair Judiciary, and I'll be back.
Thank you very much, Senator Segan. Matt, we really are beginning to get pressed for time, and we really appreciate you having up here.
And we're going to try to roll through this, because then when we get online and begin to get to the testimony from the LIOs and so forth, we'll hold that down too. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll do my best to be brief. My name again is Matt Robus. I'm the Director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation with the Department of Fish and Game. And the bill before you today, as has been mentioned before, SB 155, began in both the Senate and the House as companion bills, and they've changed through committee substitutes, and what you see before you is what passed the Senate. About a month ago, I testified in front of this committee about the original HB 208, which was, that language was the basis for this bill as well, and at that time I said that the language originally proposed was basically a technical tweak to the existing statute to overcome the issue that high-centered the department and the Board of Game in trying to implement a predation control program in the McGrath area this year. The current language in front of you, which has gone through some changes in the Senate as well as here, excuse me, is now a fairly substantial change to that statute. And very briefly, I'd like to go through and tell you what we think it does. In Section 1 of the bill, which is the part of the statute that allows the department to employ non-department, it allows the Board of Game to establish a predation control program that utilizes non-department personnel for a predation control situation, is changed here by streamlining. It's a fairly cumbersome process in the existing statute, whereby the Board of Game listens to the department, gives scientific information. The Board of Game crafts a draft program. Under the current statute, then, they have to request the Commissioner of Fish and Game to make a finding based on three criteria. Those criteria are, is predation creating a decline in the ungulate population? Would reversal of the predation or reduction of the predation allow that ungulate population to improve? And finally, are aerial methods necessary in order to accomplish the reduction in predation? The language in Section 1 streamlines that process fairly significantly in that it takes the commissioner finding out of that process. And a lot of the discussion and debate that happened in Senate committees is whether or not the executive branch retains authority to make decisions on whether programs are going to be implemented or not. And I guess I'd like to say here that we believe that there is still a significant role in decision-making within the department and the administration, because this bill does not affect the fiscal authority of the commissioner to run the department. And also, there is a Federal Airborne Hunting Act that disallows people from conducting this type of activity unless the state issues a permit certifying that they are engaged in an activity to protect a wildlife population. So the state still will have a significant role no matter what is done with this statute. Section 2 of the bill also received quite a bit of discussion, and as Senator Seekin said, we believe the Department of Law has advised us that the Board of Game already has the authorities that are listed in Section 2. We asked the senator, the sponsor on the Senate side, to consider making the language more flexible in that we didn't feel it was wise to have the board mandated to establish all four of these things every time there's a predation control program. We thought that allowing some flexibility would make it more likely that a program would actually be implemented by the executive branch. And I'd like to acknowledge now that Senator Seekins and his staff worked with us quite a bit on both Section 1 and Section 2, and we believe that there's some pretty significant improvements in the language that have been achieved through the process of going through committees to date. However, the current version, looking at it on balance, the fact that the commissioner is entirely removed from the process is something that the administration objects to and finds the bill in its current form unacceptable. The original bill left the commissioner in the process. The current version before you that passed the Senate removes the commissioner entirely, and we have worked up with the Department of Law's assistance some language that I believe has been distributed to you as a possible amendment that would hopefully make a take a compromise position between those two poles, in that it would, after the Board of Game comes up with a predation control program and submits it to the department, the commissioner would have a finite short period within which to justify why it should not be carried out. And otherwise, if no response is forthcoming in that short amount of period of time, the program would go forward. And we think that this addresses the pocket veto issue that Senator Seekins has voiced, and which I think, based upon the way the statute's written, is a valid thing to be concerned about. And I want to emphasize that the situation at McGrath was purely a technical inability for the commissioner to make a finding as requested by the Board of Game, because the population objective for that particular moose herd was reduced as part of a compromise during a adaptive wildlife management team process that was underway out there several years ago in an attempt to get some sort of redress for the wildlife management situation in Unit 19D East, where the moose population is at low levels and not recovering, and we judge the predation as a significant reason for it. So with that, I will stop, but I'd be happy to try to answer questions if there are any, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, questions. We hold this down because we have a bunch of people online here we want to listen to, but we do want to ask you some questions. Representative. Okay.
They're just getting back to and hearing people online. I'll hold my question.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you very much, Matt. Okay, we have online with us today Jesse van der Zanden. Are you there, Jeff?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me, Chairman?
Fine. We want to hold. We have a lot of people to testify, so if you can hold your testimony to about 2 minutes, we would really be obliged.
Sure, I'll do my best. Chairman, FADE members of the House Resources Committee, my name is Jesse van der Zanden, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Outdoor Council. We represent about 50 outdoor clubs for a collective membership of about 12,000 Alaskan hunters, fishers, trappers, and public access advocates. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of one of our top priorities for this session, and that is Senate Bill 155. And perhaps it's most appropriate to start by stating what this bill is not. This bill is not about fair chase or ethics. It's not about providing trophy moose hunters with bigger moose racks. It's not about eliminating wolves. And it's not about being against predators. These are popular myths that we believe have been perpetuated by folks who seek to put wolves on a pedestal and by doing so create public sympathy for them at the expense of other wildlife species. This undermines the integrity of scientific wildlife management and further, every Alaskan who wishes to utilize wild food for sustenance. These myths can and should be refuted, and you have an opportunity to do that today. This bill is about asserting the state's right to manage wildlife in a scientific manner for the benefit of its citizenry. It's about helping the state meet its statutory and constitutional obligations managing wildlife for sustained yield. It's about putting wildlife management back into the hands of professional managers who know it best, people in the field, close to the ground, who know what's going on day to day, year in and year out. Population levels, the predation impact, the habitat conditions, other conditions, use patterns, and the myriad of factors that must be accounted for in managing wildlife for sustained yield. The bill is narrow in focus. It would limit airborne or same-day airborne predation management to only those areas where big game populations are depressed. Predation has conclusively been determined to be a factor in that decline. It requires authorization by the Board of Game to conduct airborne or same-day airborne management within the context of an approved wildlife management plan founded on the recommendations of professional managers. These plans are regularly scrutinized and commented on by the public in one of the most open and deliberative public processes in the nation. It should also be recognized that this practice is not a widespread, one that we believe must be available for professional managers responding to ever-changing environmental conditions. It's available in nearly every other state in the union. Given Alaska's challenging geography, it should be available here. It also ties predation management to population objectives, and these population objectives seek to establish how many moose and how many predators exist in a long-term sustainable manner in a certain area. Predators are part of the management equation. They are conserved for, they are accounted for, they are managed for, they are not managed against. It is a question of how we manage wolves. It's not a question of how we manage wolves. It's a question of how we manage wildlife. These population objectives also account for human harvest. They must, if hunting is to continue, and if predator and prey populations are to be conserved and maintained. We urge you to put Alaskans who utilize wild food for sustenance, who share a strong conservation ethic for nature's predators and prey, and who rely on individual responsibility back into the management equation by passing this bill today. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you very much. Jesse, would you just remain there, because we'll go ahead and have other testimony, and then after we get through the testimony, we'll come back and ask questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Next, we have a Dick Bishop. Are you there, Dick?
I'm Mr. Chairman. This is Dick Bishop. I'm testifying on my own behalf. Thank you for the opportunity. I support Senate Bill 155. It makes clear that when it comes to allocating big game prey for various uses, the buck stops at the Board of Game. When the board is bound by the same sideboards as the Department of Fish and Game, wildlife must be managed on the sustained yield or self-perpetuating principle. Sustained yield of game includes hunting and trapping, which are the yield part. The board and department are also obligated by law to provide for continued important hunting opportunities, and the board is obligated to make allocations among various uses and upon management approaches to meet these obligations. The board relies on the department's data and professional advice regarding the condition of the particular population and what sort of management would enable the board to meet its obligations. SB 155 provides the authority for the Board of Game to use more of the available management methods to fulfill their responsibilities. The board's decisions must still be based on information and interpretation provided by the department. And implementation, as Matt Robus indicated, predator-prey management involving use of aircraft also requires department cooperation in order to meet conditions of the Federal Airborne Hunting Act. The Alaskan paradox in predator-prey management is that while Alaska is huge, only 10 to 20% of its lands are available for active management of predator-prey systems or even of habitat. Federal non-management on 50 to 60% of the state-closed areas, urban areas, and barren lands combined make up 80 to 90% of the state lands. The 10 to 20% of Alaska where management can be done has become critically important to those who pursue the Alaskan tradition of hunting, whether for food, for cultural values, such as my own, or as guides who make a living serving the interests of our visitors. Passage of SB 155 will help the state fulfill its constitutional mandate of managing on the sustained yield principle, subject to preferences among beneficial uses for the maximum benefit of the people. Thank you very much, and I am also available to answer questions.
Thank you very much, Dick. Okay, next we have from the Anchorage LIO, we have Paul Joslin. Are you there with us today, Paul?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Nate, just state your name and your affiliation, please.
Yes, my name is Paul Joslin, and I'm the conservation biologist with the Alaska Wildlife Alliance. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 155 would bring back same-day airborne hunting of wolves. Permitted members of the public who can afford it would once again be able to play cowboys in the sky chasing wolves across the landscape. It is barbaric, raises public safety issues, and is inexcusable no matter how contrived, including in the name of predator control. Proponents of same-day airborne hunting of wolves have argued that it is an absolute necessity as a way to kill them, and that with the loss of this technique, the ability to kill wolves has gone down. The exact opposite is true. We are now killing more wolves than ever. And I have provided each of you with copies of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game harvest summary records on wolf take in Alaska over the past 25 years. From these records, you can see for yourself that it has been steadily increasing from about 600 wolves a year to now over 1,500 wolves a year, which is a whopping increase of nearly 150%. This trend appears to be continuing. In the winter of 2001-2002, 1,741 wolves were listed as killed. The increase has come about largely because hunters have better equipment in the way of semi-automatic weapons and fast, reliable snow machines that can out-pursue any wolf on open ground. I attend a lot of Board of Game meetings, and having personally heard the testimony of many snow machiners talking about the number of wolves they take, I'm especially concerned. In one individual case I'll never forget, but the fellow bragged about how he single-handedly chased after and shot some 18 wolves. Pursuing wolves on snow machine is now legal on about 20% of state land. And so to enact legislation that would return us to a time in the past when we had cowboys in the sky playing whoop-de-doo with wolves is wrong. If anything, you should be enacting legislation to stop the legalized unfair chasing of wolves on the ground, as well as doing something about capping the steady increase in the killing of wolves in Alaska that is occurring until we know more about what that impact is having on Alaska's natural ecosystems.
Are you just about ready to wind it up,
Mr. I'm just about ready. But this isn't about logic and science. It is about dealing with entrenched attitudes about wolves by people in power. The three little pigs and the big bad wolf was a fairy tale. Wolves are not vermin, and no, wolves do not reproduce twice a year. The voters of Alaska know that, and they have told you twice that they are not about to support you when it comes to allowing the public to use aircraft when it comes to killing them. Why isn't that message getting through? They didn't vote you in for your views on predators.
Yeah, Mr. Jocelyn, you're way past your time. We're allowing you to wrap up, though.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I guess that the last message is that Alaska has lost its preeminent position now as the wild frontier state with the highest density of wolves in America because of our antiquated attacks on predators. We are now overshadowed in recent years by Minnesota that proudly proclaims that it is able to coexist with a population of wolves that is 2.5 times that what we have per square mile. And it does it while coexisting with a
Mr.
hunting
Jocelyn,
industry
please.
That is every bit as vibrant as ours.
Mr. Jocelyn, please
Mr.
wrap
Chairman,
up
Mr. Chairman, please.
Mr. Jocelyn, please wrap your statements up now.
Well, essentially, that's it, that we really need to be doing more wolf education and a whole lot less than killing. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your testimony. We shall go on to Jenna White from the Anchorage LIO. Are you there, Jenna? And please try to hold your comments and your testimony to 2 minutes.
I am here. Thank you for the chance to speak. It is failure of a democratic government when representatives of the people vote in favor of regulations that are in opposition to the will of the people that elected them. The public already clearly voted to disallow the practice of aerial and land and shoot hunting of wolves by the public. One cannot be an expert on all subjects, and the breadth of information in the world today is overwhelming. And thus, systems have been devised so that the most qualified individuals make decisions pertinent to their area of expertise. Establishment of regulations that can have tremendous impact on wildlife populations should be administered by biological professionals. Nonetheless, certain legislatures and Board of Game members will acquire personal gain by acting as wildlife management professionals. These same individuals are active members of a group which touts that most numbers are plummeting by astronomical accounts. For example, it has been claimed in Unit 13, the moose population has dropped from 27,000 to 7,000 in a decade, and that in Unit 19D, the moose density has fallen from 3 to 4 per square mile to 1 per square mile, a 75% reduction. It has further been stated that this is not a fair chase issue, but a scientific management issue. And this is exactly the point, that science is being manipulated to suit their own desires. The scientific reality is that the true population estimates for moose and many species are not known in most parts of the state because these surveys are expensive and time demanding. Previous high estimates of moose numbers in the 1980s are pure speculation based on no scientific data and were the result of long-term state and privately sponsored wolf bounties, extensive aerial and land and shoot killing,
and poisoning. For example, in the previously mentioned Unit 13, where intensive predator control has been adopted, ADF&G biologists do not know the extent of the moose population because this area is very large and encompasses much topographical variation, and the area simply has not been censused. But in a recent ADF&G discussion item concerning the review of predator prey status in Unit 13, it was stated that, quote, there are about 22,000 moose in Unit 13 and an overall density of 0.9 moose per square mile or a density of 1.4 moose per square mile of an area below 4,000 foot in elevation. And this is considered a relatively high-density moose population for interior habitats. This number certainly is not written in stone, but it is nowhere near the 7,000 number purported by supporters of this bill. The report goes on to state that moose populations now appear comparable to levels observed in the early 1980s. Simultaneously, the most recent study showed that the wolf population has decreased by some 27% in Unit 13 due to extensive hunting and trapping.
If you would begin to wrap up now, Jenna, I would appreciate it.
No problem. The real problem is the localized overhunting has reduced bull ratios to as low as 9 bulls per 100 moose in certain areas, and this has reduced the resiliency of the herd and the overall availability of moose take. Overall, this is a scientific issue that needs to be resolved by professionals who have integrity and are looking out for the welfare of wildlife and habitats in which they reside instead of playing politics. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Vic Van Ballenberg from Anchorage, LIO. Are you there, Vic?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. My name is Vic Van Ballenberg. I live in Anchorage, and I'm a former member of the Board of Game. I was appointed in 1985 by Bill Sheffield, and twice, 1996 and in 2002 by Tony Knowles.
If you could keep your comments and your testimony brief, we would appreciate it.
I will, Mr. Chairman. There are two parts of this bill that I think are controversial. Obviously, the first relates to the public using airplanes to take wolves. When I was on the Board of Game in 1985, 6, and 7, the board began to address the problems of the public taking wolves with airplanes. This problem is nothing new. It's been around for years. You've heard about the 96 initiative and the 2000 referendum that dealt with it. Clear back in 86, 10 years before the initiative, the board acted first to restrict land and shoot hunting. Why did they do that? They did it because the practice had numerous problems that related to hunters shooting directly from the air and hazing and harassing wolves, both of which were illegal under state and federal law. That led to a series of well-publicized court cases in this state and public outrage over the practice. I believe, Mr. Chairman, that whether land and shoot hunting or same-day airborne hunting is done as a predator control measure or not, the public is still strongly opposed to it. Obviously, those two votes in 96 and 2000 demonstrated the strength of that opposition. And, Mr. Chairman, I believe that if this bill passes, there may well yet be another referendum, a third vote on this issue to overturn the legislature's action. Mr. Chairman, I think that allowing the public to shoot wolves, whether under the guise of predator control or not, is a bad practice and goes against the will of most of the citizens of this state. Secondly, Mr. Chairman, the effort in this bill is to cut the commissioner and hence the governor out of decision-making on wolf control. The governor is the ultimate political authority on this issue. The Game Board is not an elected body. The governor is elected, and only he can see the broad public policy issues involved in controversial things like wolf control, and only he can make the final ultimate decision through the Commissioner of Fish and Game whether or not these practices should proceed. Finally, as Mr. Robus mentioned, there is a legal problem in that Public Law 92-159 passed by the U.S. Congress, the Airborne Hunting Act, requires the state fish and game agencies, not the boards of game, to issue permits for aerial control. And this bill, by overriding that process, generates some serious and, problems, intractable problems that need to be rectified. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That concludes my testimony.
And thank you, Mr. Van Vallenberg. Now we're going to switch to the Matsu LIO, and we have Robert Fithian there. Are you with us today, Robert?
Yes, Chairman Fate, House Resource Committee members. My name is Robert Fithian. I live in Lower Tontina, Alaska, and I'm a master guide and eco tour operator. I'm testifying today on behalf of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association as their executive director regarding Senate Bill 155. The APHA represents Alaska's oldest tourism-related industry, the guided sport hunting industry. This industry contributes over $120 million new dollars to Alaska each year, a minimum of 75% of the annual ADF&G wildlife conservation budget comes from the non-resident clientele that this industry caters to. I'm going to refer you to Article 1, Section 1 of our state constitution, Article 8, Section 3 and 4 of the Alaska Constitution. During the past decade, we have seen a steady and continual decline in the cow moose populations in Alaska of at least 55%. The annual calf survival rate is under 7%. Only 3.5% of the surviving calves are female, and fewer of that percentage are living to be of recruitment age to replenish the declining populations. The average annual harvest rate of moose statewide currently is as follows. 86% die by predation, 10% die of natural mortality, and 4% by human harvest. What these facts prove is that if we stopped all human harvest of moose today, a year from now we will still have fewer moose. Hunting and human harvest is having no significant effect on the state's moose population. Let me advise you on another commonly overlooked fact here. If the facts were known regarding our doll sheep and in many areas our caribou populations, and they had as an important role throughout the main river corridor communities of Alaska as meat and subsistence species, you would find that their plight is as bad as that of our moose. It's a terrible representation of the stewardship of these resources. It's important for you to note that during the past 10 years, the non-resident sportsman has lost opportunity to hunt on over 50 million acres of public lands that are open to sport hunting due to the continual reducing numbers of Alaska's moose, sheep, and caribou populations and the mandates of the state subsistence law. Only two times in the history of our state have we seen such detriment dealt to our precious wildlife populations as we have in the past 15 years. These two instances were the near extinction of the sea otter by the Russians and the demise of Alaska's wild salmon during the territorial years.
Okay, Robert, can you begin to wrap it up, please?
Sure. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The APHA warrants that what Alaska will gain by passage of Senate Bill 155 and the administration's mandates of management of Alaska's wildlife populations for abundance will do far more benefit for Alaska's tourism industries and the vision that the world has of Alaska than any boycott can do us harm. It's time for us to stand up for Alaska and the vision that the world has of our state, a vision of incomparable wild lands and bountiful populations of wildlife. Our civil, constitutional, and moral stewardship requirements need to be adhered to. The APHA urges you, for the sake of our precious wildlife resources, and the people of rural Alaska, to support this bill. Thank you, respectfully, Mr. Chairman, and board committee members.
And thank you, Robert. And for everybody online, if you have written testimony, it would be nice if you would get that written testimony into to the resource committee here.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Cisna.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I did look through my materials, and I didn't find the handout that Mr. Jocelyn had said that he had. Has anybody seen it? If he's online, if he could
He should get that. Anybody that has written testimony should get that in.
Thank you.
Thank you. And now we are going to close public testimony, and we will have questions. However, we need everybody to stay online And Mr. Robus, if you will stay until we can conclude the questions, because I intend to move the bill out today. Any questions of any of those people that were online?
I have a question for Greg.
Yeah, for Mr. Robus?
Yeah, for Matt.
Oh, Matt.
There's a letter in our packet from Jenny Purcell from UNG, and it says, an aspect of Senate Bill 155 states that aerial predator control can be cleared by the Board of Game without the backing of the Department of Fish and Game. I was wondering if you could fill us in on that very topic.
Through the Chair, Representative Masick, I'll do my best. Our reading, and one thing that may not be clear, is that under the existing statute, let alone what's before you, the public can be involved in predation control programs involving same-day airborne or airborne hunting if this complicated process has gone through that I mentioned before. The Board of Game under the language, thank you, the Board of Game under the language in SB 155 would be able to go ahead and put together a predation control program and hand it to the executive branch without the involvement of the commissioner. But as I said before, in two ways, the department still would have some authority and some say in whether or not a program went forward. And one is that the board does not have any fiscal authority over the department, and the commissioner still controls the purse strings for what happens and therefore can direct that something either be done or not done. And then secondly, the provisions of the Airborne Hunting Act means that if non-department people are involved in predation control activities involving aerial methods, the state must, as we read it, issue a permit to protect people from federal prosecution under that law. People can be made legal if there's a state permit that says that they're participating in a program to protect a wildlife population. And in this case, it would either be moose or caribou or one of the ungulate populations identified under the intensive management law. Now, I haven't read the letter, so I'm not sure if I'm right on target, but I think that answers the question you asked, Mr. Chair.
I guess it just, follow up, Mr. Yeah. Chairman, I guess it just says here that the aerial predator control can be declared by the Board of Game without the backing of the Department of Fish and Game.
I think that's true, but again, the department and the administration would still retain the final say as to whether or not to implement that program.
I just wanted to get that on record, Mr. Chairman. And then just another follow-up, I guess I'm listening to the testimony, and we have in our packets here letters of testimony before the Board of Game meeting on March 6th, and there is a letter in there from Lewis E. Christopher McGrath, and it says just last March 5th on the statewide news, Paul Jocelyn stated that their survey showed that 75% of rural Alaskans oppose predator control. And I just wanted to put on record that from this letter that he sent, that he contacted all the villages in the McGrath area, and none of them have any knowledge of the survey. And I guess I just wanted to put that on record, too, that since we have residents that live in the affected area, they were never asked about the survey. So I just find that kind of amazing that this Mr. Jocelyn could say that the survey had an impact, but if they didn't go out to the rural areas and ask for their input, then I just thought I'd bring that up just for a comment to the committee here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I'm going to ask you, Matt, there was kind of an allegation that the moose count was not a valid count and had no scientific basis. Could you comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, Yes, I will. It's true that there's a lot of art in the science of wildlife management, and it's true that these surveys are expensive, and we have to try to hopscotch around the state. And there are a lot of areas that we don't survey every year, but we try to keep hopping around and checking up on places from time to time. And the department is among the leaders in the world in developing aerial survey techniques, and we have done what we can to try to develop ways to do the best job we can of estimating, not directly counting every last one, but estimating moose populations and other wildlife populations in the state.
I think, if not to intrude too much here, but I think that the allegations are were against the validity, not the process. Are they valid?
I believe they are, Mr. Chairman, although depending on where, and this is what I was leading up to, depending on where you're looking specifically, we may have less scientific data than in other places. But in places where we've got significant management problems, we try to allocate our resources so that we do fly high-quality surveys and do the best job we can under the conditions. You know, we can still be foiled by weather conditions or other anomalies, we have, we believe, valid results and estimates that are as good as you can get under the circumstances.
Okay, thank you very much. Question, Representative Guttenberg.
On the same point, Mr. Chair, but maybe from a different angle, might be from some people in this. Looking at the moose population trends that we have here in this graph, unless you have that also, some game management biologists and resource managers have mentioned the fact that the 1988 number was an anomaly, that shooting up to that level, actually just, if you just took out the bottom and the top of everything, kind of like Olympic scoring, you would find more of an average, that, shooting for the 27.5, that was the anomaly, and that the average is, somewhere else in there. That the real number, shooting for an all-time record high, what the number should be, or for an attainment goal, isn't actually feasible. So when you're looking at those numbers and building in that equation, for predator control or for harvest management, trying to get back there, that's not reasonable either.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, you make a good point, and the department is on record repeatedly as trying to make sure that population and harvest objectives that are established are reasonable and real, achievable, and that there's no doubt and no argument from the department that we don't have a management problem for ungulates in Unit 13 and Unit 19D and several other places. But in trying to correct those problems, we need to be careful that we aim towards objectives that can be sustained and that don't create more problems when we get there. Anybody who knows the history of the Nelchina caribou herd knows that populations do fluctuate the way Senator Seekins mentioned, and we have to be careful when trends are going up not to stimulate something that gets so high that it creates damage. Also, with respect to this graph,